May my spoken word, like your written word, bring us ever closer to the living word, Jesus, your Christ. You know what to do. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, get him up, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. Light. Light is an important theme for us. It's intimately connected with truth and our ability to see it. And it's a universal theme. The Hindu feast Diwali means festival of lights. It signifies victory of light over darkness, of knowledge over ignorance, good over evil. The Quran refers to Allah as the light of the heavens and the earth. During Hanukkah, we light 9 candles. Because it is a festival of lights, a festival of hope over despair. And the same is true for us, Christians, a festival of light that we prepare for. And it takes place right after the longest, darkest night of the year, December 21st, the winter solstice. All of these festivals happen when the days of light are getting shorter and the night and the darkness seems to be expanding. And of course, we are reminded that the theme of darkness is a metaphor for darkness in more ominous ways. The darkness of war. The darkness of political strife. The darkness of suffering. And as we come to the end of our church year, our readings take an ominous turn. I hope you heard that this morning in our reading. God saying how he hates our festivals and our solemn assemblies, but let justice roll down like water. And then Paul's description of the sound of God's trumpet, calling some people to go and meet Jesus in the air. Whee! While others, tut tut, are left behind. This singular image has ushered in an entire cottage industry of fear-mongering based on apocalypse, which I'll just say is very poor theology, but I'll save that sermon for another time. But here's the reality. The reality is that even as Christians or people of light, as we prepare for the end, we know that in the economy of God, it also represents a new beginning. That bears repeating. The reality is, even as we prepare for the end, in God's economy, it is always also a new beginning. Never forget that. As Christians, we read about the end so that we might prepare for a new beginning. Jesus was born when things were dark and times were troubled. And they had been for a long time. And the light of Christ is so bright that sometimes we forget the immense darkness into which Christ is born. God's faithful had waited and waited and yearned and cried out, "How long, O Lord, how long?" It had been 1,000 years since the golden years of King David. And God's promise to raise up another ruler in David's line, that he would establish in this person his throne forever. 1,000 years. This isn't waiting for a bus, y'all. 700 years since the prophet Isaiah had prophesied that Emmanuel, which means God is with us, would actually be with us, and he will be named Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. And the circumstances of Jesus' birth are also pretty dark. In the gospel, Jesus seems to be born out of wedlock in an occupied territory. Jesus' mother and father forced on a journey because of a census. Not a census like, you know, tick the box and we're done. This was a census that we need you all to go to Baton Rouge and register. But you can't use a car or an Uber or a train. You got to walk it. Together, go, off you go. Matthew's birth narrative begins with the story of the Magi coming from the east, following the star looking for a king. They find Herod. Seems the king position had already been filled, and Herod goes out of his way to ensure he has no competition by the slaughtering of the innocents in and around Bethlehem, turning Mary and Joseph and Jesus into immigrants fleeing violence. And we who prepare, who wait to see the light of Christ, do so amid our own modern darkness as well. So the image of waiting for a bridegroom while we are tending to our own little lamps seems to be a quite important one. Are you doing everything necessary in this darkness to tend to your own small light? In other words, what are you doing to combat despair? What are you doing to rid yourself of cynicism or to keep your heart soft rather than stony? Are you able to take in the news cycle without letting your light go out? Are you ready for the image of Christ to arrive suddenly in your life? The community that gathered around Jesus was committed to seeing light in the darkness. But more than that, the community that gathered around Jesus was called to be the light in the darkness. Remember, Jesus calls those around him, encourages them to be salt and light for others. My favorite theologian, Meister Eckhart, reminds us, it is in darkness that one finds the light. So when we are in sorrow, light is nearest. In fact, it is the darkness. It is the trials and tribulation that almost always raise up a new light, a new hope that forms us in profound ways if we are willing to see the world as God sees it. Let me give you a favorite example. It's from an HBO series. I can't really recommend it from the pulpit, if you know what I mean. But when I got to the end of the series, True Detective, the last few lines took my breath away. Two detectives, battered and bruised, one is pushing another one out of the hospital in a wheelchair. It's been the end of a very dark case. They look up in the night sky, which surrounds them, sort of looming. And one detective, who through the series has been the atheist, he says, you know, there's just one story, light versus dark. And the other detective, who you could describe maybe as a kind of cultural Catholic, he looks up into the same sky and says, it seems to me that dark has a lot more territory. To which the atheist replies after a long pause, you know, you're looking at it wrong, the whole sky thing. Because once, there was only dark. If you ask me, the light is winning. As you prepare to put your tree up, to unwrap those nativity figures and place them lovingly upon your mantle, take a moment and hold that tiny baby infant in your hand and remind yourself that this manger scene is a manger scene of hope and of light. That is the message that is told to the shepherds in the field keeping their watch. That is the message that is told to the Magi who come to see this infant in the darkness. that the light is winning. The light shines in the darkness. The darkness did not overcome it. That's how John's gospel begins. And so many of the Bible's best stories, perhaps all of the Bible's best stories, begin in the darkest days when things seem hopeless. Daniel cast into the lion's den. David having to fight the, you know, unconquerable Goliath. Great floods. People enslaved. We can't read stories about milk and honey without forgetting that we have come through the land of darkness and the valley of dry bones. We are the people, you and I are the people about which Isaiah writes, the people who have walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who lived in a land of deep darkness, on us light has shined. You know, at Trinity, we are committed to helping you kindle your small flame and your tiny lights, to stand in the darkness. We bear Christ's light when we reach out to help others into the light. We kindle that light when we support one another with our presence on a Sunday morning. We kindle that light when we support with our generosity all that Trinity does. If you open up the back of our bulletin, it is literally chock full of ways that you can put oil in your lamp. Through worship, through service, through formation. Tend your lamps, because the smallest of flames is lethal to the surrounding darkness. Tend your lamps, because you are people of light. And remember, in the beginning, there was only darkness. Seems to me the light is winning.